And welcome. You're tuning in with me, Steve Griffiths, and Jeremy Eames. We also have with us today Jonathan Bucket from Pragmatic Integration. We also have Tom, who's going to join us a little bit later on. He's currently on a fast motorbike coming from London to the studio. So we hope he's going to join us. Anyway, we're now over to the news, Jay. So perhaps you could let us know where we
are. Yeah, well, some exciting news this week. Sky have announced that they're spending $1 million, which is £757,000 to be precise, on bringing live drone racing to UK viewers.
Okay.
So it's going to be a new sport in the sporting world. So the satellite broadcaster is making the investment in the Drone Racing League to bring to its new channel, the Sky Sports Mix channel. So what it's going to entail is the league specialises in first-person view drone racing, which features pilots flying custom drones through complex three-dimensional race courses.
Right.
So, quite exciting. Maybe it's sponsored by Amazon, I'm guessing, as well, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots around drone and drone safety that we've talked about in the past. And in fact, there's continual discussions from the CAA about how safe or not safe they are. But also, you know, I think the fact is that you'll get very, very good video from a drone as it flies through a course, which could be really, really interesting to see.
Well, have you seen it on YouTube or wherever?
Yeah.
It's exciting.
It's amazing. Yeah, really, absolutely amazing. And the technology, there's a lot in there, Jonathan, isn't there, in terms of making them fly, but controlling them and things
absolutely,
like that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I've got this sort of a vision of like Red Bull air racing type thing, but goes to small drones. So, yeah.
But also, the other thing interesting about this story is that this Sky are following US broadcaster ESPN. I don't know if you're a fan of so they've made the decision to start showing drone racing as well. So obviously companies
there's a tie up there.
Yeah, they're thinking that it's going to be quite big, this drone racing.
Yeah.
And apparently ESPN have claimed that drone racing is set to become as popular as NASCAR and Formula One car racing.
Never as popular as Formula One.
No. Yeah. I'm not a fan, but...
I am a super fan. Yeah. So
Bernie Eccleston's next move.
Maybe. Now he's sold that stake in his company to the American company. Maybe he's going to invest all his money in drone racing. Interestingly enough, Jay, we are going to be at XL in October at the same time as the drone exhibition is on. So I'm hoping we'll be able to nip in there. While we're at Apps World, we might get some time to pop in there and actually look at some of the technology that's going on.
That'd
be really interesting. Yeah, hopefully we can. My story is, well, first of all, I spent all weekend playing Unbox that we featured last week.
Oh, no way.
My
what
thumbs are sore, actually. But no, there's a whole nother story there as well. But no, it's great. A great game. And it was really nice to have that real 90s platform.
Yeah, loved it.
Yeah,
jumping took back to the past. Yeah.
It took me back to my days playing Sonic and everything else. So that was really, really good. And the other story we featured and is rumbling on is obviously the iPhone 7. Everybody hates the fact that it's got no earphone jack.
Yeah, these headphones, they're causing quite a stir online, aren't they?
Yeah, there are some really funny tweets as well that we've had coming through. Yeah. I've just invented a pair of cordless headphones and they've just literally cut the cable off.
Yeah.
So it's great. Are you an iPhone user, Jonathan?
Only recently. My wife
converted me to have a go,
and to be honest, love it absolutely.
It's so easy, isn't it? That's the thing with Apple, that they just
it's really intuitive, actually.
To the point where I even got my mother an iPad,
really,
because it's got one button.
Yeah,
and that's all you need to worry about. So you just if you get stuck, just press that one button.
Yeah,
and you're back to home, and you can do whatever. I mean, it to me, it's a tool.
Yep.
It's got to make calls.
Yep.
But slowly I'm using more Waze as an app.
Always worry that I'm not, as Jay knows, I'm slightly older, techie guy, and I'm always worried I'm not using the full functionality, or there's things out there that I should have on my phone that I should be using. And I suppose that's some of the brand.
You're too
Apple.
Busy playing Unboxed.
That's true.
Let's be honest.
Yeah. So, but no, the 7's come out, and the good news is that the 6 prices are dropping already.
Mm-hmm.
So they've announced their pricing and they've brought down the cost of the 6.
It was interesting that you mentioned the one button. So the big rumour is that the next iPhone, which they release next year, it's going to lose the button and the whole screen is just going to be a screen. It's going to be a flat screen, so no kind of edges. It's going to be a whole screen.
And that's the 8, yeah?
the 8, yeah, and I say
there's also been an upgrade for the 6 lately as well, which has brought in different functionality. It's changed, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, great. Well, I'm sure we'll be talking for weeks and weeks and weeks about the 7, and there'll be all sorts of problems. And also, I know we've got a story later on about the Samsung as well, which is causing some issues.
Yeah.
So, any other stories for us at all on your point of view, or shall we get straight into it?
I think we should just jump straight in and interview Jonathan. Right.
So, welcome, Jonathan. lovely to have you along. And we normally start off by talking a little bit about people's past and how they've happened to end up where they are. But first of all, tell us about your company. And then we'll talk about how you've gone from a civil engineer to a software programmer. But tell us about your company.
Yeah, sure. Our company is Pragmatic Integration. We're a consultancy that deals with quality, health and safety and environmental and business management systems.
Yep.
So really going in to help companies either achieve ISO accreditation for quality, health and safety, environmental, or implement business management systems, whether that be an ERP system or business processes improvements, that sort of thing. Software as a background for me, no, I'm not a software developer.
Okay.
I'm not a programmer.
Yep.
As you say, I started life as a civil engineer.
Yeah.
That's quite a change.
rather. And you know, earlier we were talking, you sort of sit back and look at yourself and go, how the hell did I end up here? You know, your career progression is a strange thing.
Yeah.
You go down various different paths. I ended up running a business management system, a business information system for a global company.
Yeah.
Just purely through project management skills that I developed as working in the construction industry, and ended up running their global business management system. So that was for their full ERP system, as well as their quality, health and safety and environmental management. And as part of that operation, the company I worked for had representation right across the US, Europe, Asia, Australia. They wanted to achieve ISO accreditation across every one of those offices. And we actually developed an in-house intranet-based application for us to be able to publish the documents so that everybody could access them. Having left that company now, 4 years ago, the programmer that I had as part of my team also left the company. We redeveloped that application onto a new platform with new technology because I knew it had potential out for other companies and for other people. And that's really where we are. We've got it now. It's out there. It means you can access any of your quality management system on your laptop, your PC, your iPad, your iPhone, wherever you are.
And it is important for companies to look at quality standards, isn't it? I think there's, whether it's bidding for public contracts or it's actually about internal control of documents and quality systems.
Absolutely.
A key part of it is document control, is that correct?
It is indeed, yeah. I mean, having people be able to get access to the latest forms that you want them to record information on,
yep,
or to be able to get hold of their training certificate.
Yep.
The construction industry is a prime one. When you actually arrive at a large construction site now, you actually have to have an induction to get onto that construction site, at which point you have to show and display all of the training certificates that you have,
yep,
that you're competent to be able to utilize that tool or drive that machine or erect a scaffold or whatever it may be. And having access to your latest documentation means you haven't got to carry a file around a paper that gets thrown in the bottom of the van and gets lost. You've got everything with you. To the point where we've sort of extended the functionality of the application so that if you've got a guy with a works van and he's got a series of tools or equipment, sets of ladders or lifting, yep, equipment, he can actually carry around all of the inspection certificates, all of the safe systems of work, his risk assessments and his method statements, all with him.
So the work you did in the civil engineering field that then went through to project management, that's obviously guided a lot of the functionality that you've developed within your products or range of products. Is that true to say, I suppose?
Because I've always approached this, the development of certainly from this application, is what does the end user want at the end of the day? Not what can the technology do, but what does the user want? And the user wants something that's simple, easy to use, accessible. Doesn't mean I have to go searching for stuff. It's got to be there straight away. But from the people who actually then administer it, what I don't want to do is have to download a huge amount of software to do it.
Yeah.
I want to utilize the tools that I've already got. So this platform, all of the technology that you need to be able to upload this to the website and get it out is Microsoft Office.
Right.
We've developed it. So you actually develop your own documentation in Microsoft Office. You upload it to the internet. It links all of those documents together, effectively creates every document as a web page. And you can click between any one of those documents and hyperlink them all together.
Okay.
And then make it available for you to download.
So some of the functionalities around, obviously, record management and actually making that visible in a more mobile environment, mm-hmm. which, again, is requires things like use on various different systems. I assume your Android and iOS and, yep.
There is no application.
Oh, is it? So is it a web-based?
It's a web-based
portal, so yep. you go through. What so, about security, though? Because obviously that's very sensitive information, or could be sensitive information.
It is indeed.
Yeah, so how do you go about controlling
it
that?
It has a secure login, so to actually access the information on the website,
yep.
there's a secure login, so you have to have a username and password. The company, if they take on the application, have an administrative account, so they can add and edit users with their permissions. They can either have a read-only access, yep. so they can view everything on that website, or you can have a read and download ability. So you can actually then say, well, okay, yeah, I need that form. Click the download button. You've got it then on your device.
Yeah. And then what sort of companies are you working with in terms of size and maybe areas of focus? I mean, is it a broad range of companies or...?
Do you know what? It is a huge range of companies. Anybody that wants to go for an ISO accreditation can utilize the application. So it can be anything from a large construction company. I've worked with large companies that build Sainsbury's and Safeways and Morrison superstores, that sort of thing, right the way through to a small fitter who's got a number of vans with his guys driving around,
yep.
Sandwich manufacturers who across their shop floor, all of the machinery and the plant and equipment, clearly if they're having an audit by one of their customers or their suppliers, they come in and they want to see all of the information about their plant, tools and equipment they've got on the shop floor. They can press the application and get all of that information straight away without having to go back into the office, search through a number of files, photocopy something, give it to the guy, or search on a file folder somewhere for a long-lost record that when you get there, you find that there are three different versions and actually somebody's deleted the one that you want.
So from a business perspective, I'm really interested in what problems you faced when you first started and kind of what problems you faced with the software especially.
Do you know, we haven't found too many problems with the software because we've developed over the last 9 years.
Yeah.
We've really stress tested it when we developed it within this one company that we originally set it up for. Probably the more tricky thing is not so much document control, is people want to say, well, this is fantastic, but now I want it to take records as well.
Yeah.
So when I filled that form in, I now want somewhere to upload that to.
Right.
So ordinarily, you know, if I download maybe an accident form, I've had an accident on a construction site, I fill that form in, I would then email that, or I'd save it locally, or I'd pass it through to my health and safety manager, whoever. They want to be able to say, right, when I filled that in, I now want to press a button that says upload. So we're actually extending the application to now create an upload site so that you can create a project area that you can then take that document, and then when you've filled it in, just press the button and upload it as simply as you did when you downloaded it. So it's really at the moment we're just testing the water and finding loads of different applications that this can be utilised for. The healthcare industry is one. We attended the Safety and Health Expo up in London.
Yeah.
We had a stand there. First time I've ever done that. It's quite daunting, but exciting all at the same time. And we were up there for the three of us for 3 days, which was great fun. Met loads and loads of people. But people were coming along going, oh, great, yeah, I work in the healthcare industry. This would really work for a care home. To be able to say, okay, I just want to click on this bed and get all of the information about that patient.
Yeah.
or that client who's in that room. And I said, well, yeah, that's an idea. While we were there, there are a number of companies that do fleet management software, where you've got a fleet of vehicles. You can spend thousands and thousands of pounds on a fleet management software. I thought, well, hold on a minute. All you're doing is documents. So let's publish a page with a picture of a van on it. You click on the picture of the van. That's my van. I've got all of the information about its MOT, its insurance certificates, and there that I can access on my phone.
Yeah.
Without having to go and ask anybody for it. You know, I'm at the side of the road. The police are asking me, have you got your insurance certificate? Bink. There it is. It's right there next to you.
So from your perspective as a business, there's obviously huge growth that you guys can go into completely different markets that you would not have normally have started
Absolutely.
With, which is brilliant. And I actually have a statistic here that in 2015, $314 billion was spent worldwide on enterprise software. So it's obviously a huge market and a huge market for you guys as you grow. So will you be predominantly focusing on the UK or is it worldwide? Or
well, interesting enough, actually, Innovate UK have just tweeted that the Singapore government is looking for a remote access management service for government ministries and departments.
Yeah.
Actually, so it says apply by the 18th of September.
It's a job application that we've got going on.
Yeah, and I've got it running here. But that's an idea of some of the government. It's about controlling information, but it's Absolutely. A reassurance about have people got the correct qualifications or is the equipment, and it's about a system where you can simply and easily show that and actually verify. What about where, I'll come back to your bit in a minute, Jay. What about where qualifications need regular refreshing? So, for instance, if you're in a care home, you might have manual handling regulation training that you need every year. Would your system prompt and enable somebody to do that?
Yeah, what we do. I mean, essentially, all you're doing is uploading a document to the website. What we do is when you upload that document, we can actually say, right, has this document got an expiration date? So we can put an expiration date. The system will then say, hey, look, you've got these documents, whether it be a manual handling or your first aid training or whatever, or you've got a cost assessment for a product that you use, a paint or a grease or an oil, to say, look, this expires in a month's time. It'll send you an email warning to say these documents need to be reviewed. Your training certificates need to be reviewed because they're going to expire. The other thing we do when you upload that document as well is that you can create tag words that are associated to the document. A prime example is a COSH assessment, which is a control of substances hazardous to health. Yep. If you've got a spray paint, a line marker paint that you're using out on a construction site, everybody knows it as line marker paint, but we've bought paint XYZ. So the COSH assessment says paint XYZ. We can put a tag against that to say line marker. So if anybody says, oh, where's your COSH assessment for your line marker? You just type line marker in, boom, up comes the
COSH. Because that's the other problem that a huge number of companies face is they have this files and files and files, electronic files of information that they have to produce legally.
Absolutely.
But actually, how can they get to it quickly and easily? And I assume that's the benefit of your system
you can get at that information using those tag words, using the search functionality on any device. As long as you can get connectivity, all you're doing is accessing the website and you can get at all of that information.
And Steve, I mean, you had experience working in the fire service. I mean, would you think a system like this would be greatly beneficial?
There's we did have lots of mobile data information, so using databases or pre-stored information.
Yep.
You'd have within a vehicle data and information about risks and everything else, and that's a huge market in itself, and that is very similar to the systems you're describing here.
Yeah.
One, what was crucial was about access control, security, reliability, and having the data available quickly. But also it's about being very simple to search for the information you
Absolutely.
Need at that time very quickly, because obviously it's an emergency situation. Mm. So whether it's how to deal with a particular chemical or what's the layout of a particular building or maybe the risk to the firefighters.
There must have been mountains of data that you had to go through.
It was really much about the simplest bits of information available very quickly. And that's the same for yourself in terms of your system. It's about, I'm on a site, I've got to use this equipment, and they're questioning, is it in date or is it certificated, and can, or have I got my site safety certificate, or have I got my manual handling training, and can I prove it, you know, it's there.
It's about getting accessibility to that information as quickly as possible.
No, we could talk forever. Tell us a little bit, how do we get more information about your software and systems?
Okay, so we have our website, which is pragmatic-integration.com. We're on Twitter, P_IMS, because we're marketing this as what's called an integrated management system. So essentially, you can log on there, you get access to all of your integrated system, whether it be quality, health and safety, or environmental. Or email me, jonathan.bucket@pragmatic-integration.com.
Jonathan, thanks for joining. I know you're going to stay with us.
Yeah, sure.
Lots on Twitter about Liam, who's going to be talking to us on a pre-record. So there's a lot of discussion going on at the moment. He's going to be with us very, very shortly. But first, we need to go to this item.
So it's time for unboxing, Steve.
Well, I'm so excited.
I know you are. I know.
I'm really excited.
So for listeners who are unsure what unboxing is, so every week we have our unboxing segment on the show. It's where we get to hear real live first impressions on products that our Tech Talk researchers have sourced for us from some of our special guests. We don't know what's in the box until we open it, and we either make a decision of either back in the box if we hate it, or that rocks if we love it. So for listeners who are listening, please watch us on Periscope by clicking on the @TechTalkShowUK Twitter feed, and we'll answer any questions you may have. And Harry, our social media manager, who just walked into the room now, he's going to be reading out comments for us as we go. So we've got a slight change this week. I'm going to be unboxing it this week.
Okay, right.
I have no idea what it is or anything, so let's hope it's good.
We've also got our super producer, Chris, is with us as well. So Chris is going to also, working with Harry, here he is now. Hopefully you can look in and see us on Periscope. We're there. And he's also going to shout out if there's any comments coming through. So, Jay, over to you.
Harry's just here comes over the box now.
What's it say on the top?
It says, the Tech Talk Show, do not open until Thursday the 15th of September.
Get stuck
happens
in.
Happens to be
Get
today.
Get stuck in. Come on, what we got?
Ooh, what is this?
So
it
Jay's
looks very
just
Batman-y.
Yeah, Jay's just putting the box out. It's a white and red box. So, Jay, what's it say?
It says it's a Bluetooth telescopic controller.
Okay.
I've got to admit, from a marketing perspective, I hate it. The box is boring. It looks very clinical, not very engaging or exciting. On it, it's kind of got some information, just says exclusive gaming application platform, supported for Android 3.2 and above, supported for iOS 4.3 and above. So it looks like you either stick your phone or an iPad into it, and then it turns into like a games controller.
Okay, so does it say how it works? How does it actually operate the...
Let's crack into
just
it.
Just get that box open, Jay. Can I rip it to pieces?
Rip it to pieces.
Are you a gamer, Jonathan? Do you like a game?
Yeah. I hark back to the days of the ZX Spectrum, so...
Yeah. I'm addicted to stick cricket at the moment, I have to admit, which is a bit sad, really, but I like it.
God, you're old school gaming, aren't you?
Yeah, I really like the older games, so yeah.
Right, so in the box, the controller is actually really nicely laid out. It's
show
black.
The camera. Hold it up for Harry to have a look.
For Periscope. So it's black. It's kind of got hints of red on the buttons. It's very light. It's not heavy at all, and it looks as if it's kind of easy to engage. Or you can also, it's kind of you can pull it out so you can fit in your device. So it looks like you can fit in either, as mentioned earlier, an iPad or an iPhone, or an Android phone as well. Within the box, it also comes with a USB, I'm guessing, to charge it. And it comes with this little black extending game controller book, which is obviously all the instructions inside.
Simple. Does the book look simple, easy to follow, or is it the normal? Don't bother looking at it.
It looks pretty complicated, to be honest.
Okay.
But we'll give it a shot. So,
have you got a device to go in it?
I have. Should we give it a try?
Yeah. What game you've got on there? Anything decent? Old school.
Old school.
Yeah. So Jay's just logging onto his phone. Obviously, it'll take him about 10 minutes to get that up and running.
I'm not used to it. Right. Let's see how we fit this in. I'm guessing.
So he's actually got to position the phone within the game controller. And then my understanding is that there's a Bluetooth connection that will operate between that and the game. So he is now fiddling intently. Yeah, he's got the instructions out. That's how bad it is. Jonathan, are you a big instructions reader?
I'm a man. I don't read instructions.
No, me neither.
Normally, that's, oh, I don't need that. That's
I will read the instructions once I've broken it.
Or it won't work.
Oh, so I was supposed to put that together. Should
I have done it that way? Yeah, I'm exactly the same. What is it about? I don't. Is it because we don't want other people telling us what to do?
It's a Neanderthal thing, isn't it?
Maybe. Yeah. not following. So
So I am the first person to say I generally am quite pro loving products and things like that, but this is pretty complicated. Although it's nicely laid out, there's no kind of visible on button. It's definitely not simple to use.
And this is the joy of unboxing. This is the first time we've seen this product. So it's a real genuine reaction to what it is and what it looks like.
Yeah.
All we've got is, 10 minutes to look through and actually see how to use it and what it's like.
I'm still trying to find the on button on it.
It's always confusing also when you look at the instructions and there's QR codes to download even further information, because you know it's not going to be simple, is it? So Jay is now fiddling. He's pressing nearly every button in the hope.
Oh, it's searching.
Hold on.
It's searching.
So that's obviously the Bluetooth connectivity working, is it?
Fingers crossed. Oh, it's working.
There we go.
Oh. Except it's upside down. I've got the phone upside down, so okay. Let me just turn that around. Right.
We've been asked, what game are you loading, and do you need an app for it?
So Harry's just said, I'm not sure if you picked that up on the microphone, he just said, from Periscope, what game is Jay loading, and what is he actually going
to
play?
So it's Air Attack HD, and you do need to download it from the App Store, or from the Android App Store.
Free or paid for?
It looks as if it's free. Okay. Specifically designed for this controller.
Oh, right. Okay, so it's something to play with.
So I'm just trying to kind of... Okay.
So Jay's completely silent now.
Sorry. It's not very good on the radio, is it?
He's deep in technical, trying to make it work.
Oh, so I'm shooting something.
Right, so it's actually up and running. So how does the control... Ignore the game, but how does the controller feel?
The controller feels actually really nice. Yeah. It's incredibly light, even with your phone attached to
it. It's got its own battery supply, hasn't it? So we've charged it.
Yes, correct.
So that's how it operates.
Yeah, it's all charged. So it's very simple, to be fair.
And could it operate with any device with Bluetooth? That's my understanding. It looks like it could.
It looks like it's, according to the box, it's Android and iOS.
Compliant.
Yeah.
So it could operate anything that's got basically any mobile device with Bluetooth. It can go, provide it fits in the slot or the space.
I mean, I don't have children myself, but I'm presuming it would be great for them on aeroplanes and things like that.
Yeah, I would have thought driving come air come
anything
drone control.
So,
Jonathan, do you want to have a quick look?
Yeah.
I mean, go on, Jay, pass it over.
It looks very much sort of like an Xbox controller.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah, but it's... Obviously, got the screen. You whack your screen in the middle. Yeah?
I could guarantee if my daughter had this, I would never get it off of her.
But so, what would her favourite game be? Is she driving and flying, or is it more?
No, it would probably be Minecraft.
Okay,
whenever you travel on a train or a plane anywhere, everybody now nobody talks to each other because everybody's got their head in, and the number of people that play games. Whilst traveling, commuting, or whatever, I'd say this is something you could easily put in your bag.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely easy to use.
Give you more flexibility in playing the game than.
Another question. Christy has asked, it looks a bit big. Could it be sleeker?
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, Christy, I think that it's definitely light to hold.
Yeah.
So, and it has to be kind of this size to be able to fit your phone hands, in your
especially when
device.
You've got sausage fingers and everything else. So,
yeah, like me. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say that, to be fair, it is incredibly light, so it must be easy to carry around, you know.
Yeah. I assume it lasts, the charge lasts. It's only running Bluetooth after all, so I assume the charge lasts for quite a while. So,
I guess so, yeah. Although I can't quite read the instructions because they're all in Chinese and I can't read Chinese.
I think we're coming to the end. So,
one more question.
Okay, yep. One more question.
Does your phone feel safe, which I guess is a very important question?
It does indeed feel safe. It doesn't look like anything will fall out.
So it's well held within there in terms of the system to hold the phone.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in the price.
Do you know the price?
Chris, our producer's here. So, Chris, could you let us know the price?
Come to the mic. Sorry, he's going to reveal.
Jonathan, how much would you pay for this this device here?
Christmas special, £40, I suppose.
£40. Well, that's a bargain then, because that was actually £23.97 off Amazon.
There you go.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, not bad.
So, before we go, I have to quickly ask Jonathan and Steve, back in the box or it rocks?
I'm going to say, for that price and the fact that it won't make my hands ache when I'm playing various games on my phone.
Various 90s games.
90s games, yeah. Of course, as you know. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
As long as it would work with my Spectrum emulator on my phone,
yep.
So that I can play on my old Spectrum games, then, yeah, fantastic, it rocks. But yep. If it doesn't, no.
So I was quite harsh on it at first because I do think the startup instructions are tough and the marketing of it is
dire,
grim.
Actually,
pretty horrendous.
I agree with you, yeah.
But for £23, it's light, it's stable. It's once you actually set it up, it is quite good. So I'm going to say it rocks as well.
Okay, so
there we go. Another week's unboxing done.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we now have a pre-record with Liam. Toothill, I think, is that right, Jay?
Yep, correct. Liam Toothill from Super Academy.
So, and he's in conversation with Sue Nelson.
I'm joined on the Tech Talk show by Liam Toothill, and he is the most amazing guy. I'm not even going to try and explain what he's done. I'm going to ask him to tell us what you've done in the last few years.
Hello. Thank you for a kind introduction. Over the last few years, since I left university, I'll quickly give you a bit of a background there. I studied music. I did a master's in ethnomusicology. So that's, for those of you who don't know, it's anthropology, so the study of humans, but where the core focus is on music. So it kind of poses the question, how does music, culture, and society coexist? During this research phase for this project, I was looking at grime and UK hip hop, kind of a subgenre in kind of like British music. And I was fortunate there to kind of meet a number of people who I then ended up going on to work with. Various different people from the scene, so writer, MCs, artists, DJs, producers, people that worked at youth clubs, people that worked at record labels, but during the time I had to kind of build up a big picture of the scene, construct it from like top down of what it looked like, and talk about the language, the culture, the fashion, the people, the hobbies, whatever. And the old school of grime and the origins was in kind of pirate radio, but this was...
I remember pirate radio, right, Liam? I'm old enough to remember that, which is like so embarrassing. But actually, it's the spirit of that is still the same, isn't it? It's that sort of rebellious, don't want to toe the line. Actually, that was a disruption model, if you think about it.
Completely. And the thing is, I think pirate radio was, and grime were one of the grime is one of the last genres to kind of like tag along to the old pirate radio culture. So grime started in 2002-ish, and that was when those shows were prominent, but they lost their prominence quite quickly with the birth of digital technologies and platforms such as YouTube.
And so after having all that amazing interest in that, how did you then take all that and all your connections? Because I know a lot of small companies have got great networking, actually. How do you take that and then turn that into a business?
I guess a couple of couple of points. One, I was really fortunate that I met some great people during that time, and none more so than Jamal Edwards, who is kind of the founder of SBTV and the guy who I was lucky enough to work with off the back of coming out of university. So he was a massive informant on the project, and when I finished, I took my work, showed him, and he said, "Wow, you're really doing what you're doing. That's impressive." I said, "Let me help you out." And so I'd worked as hard as I could and informed myself as best I could and created something that I could present back to people that I was proud of, that showed my skills. And it was something tangible that he could digest and say, right, yeah, I understand kind of what you're doing. And then I was then just driven and wanted to work so hard and learn so much. I didn't have necessarily business experience at that time. I didn't know startups. I hadn't had any experience of running projects and this, like, apart from a couple of things at university.
But most guys don't, do they? Most guys don't, do they? They have great, let's say, coding skills or great connections, and some of the stuff that you've been doing is really interesting. But, you know, starting a business is quite difficult, isn't it? So what do you advise people to do? Did you just go for it and just learn, just make mistakes, or?
I mean, we were fortunate, and I think with SBTV, things happen maybe the wrong way round. So usually people have an idea and then they start their business and they work towards stuff. With SBTV, it was a passion project. It was something that was a brand was created by people's willingness to document this scene and go out and create content without really knowing what the reward was, but just knowing that there was an audience being built, and that was exciting. And it was only a couple of years after all of that had been happening that really it then took that leap into transition to change into an official business. And I mean, we made loads of mistakes during those first couple of years. Like, we didn't have the experience and whatever. And yes, there's people giving you advice and mentors, but you've got to kind of live it yourself. And we made mistakes, we failed, but we learned and then we moved on. And by doing this, plus we were just fortunate that there was heat around the brand. People wanted to talk to us. I was able to speak with editorial teams and brand directs and labels, with from PRs to marketing teams to product teams to one of the first commercial projects that we did when SBTV got kind of registered as a business was with Adidas Originals, and we created loads of kind of accompanying video content for a London-wide campaign they did called We Are London, and we helped introduce them to artists and influencers. Georgia Lewis Anderson, who was the presenter at SBTV at the time, who was actually one of the young people featured in the campaign. The following year we worked with loads of cool brands. NSPCC, we did a national campaign with them where we got over 1,000 competition entries and 1 million+ views on like the final video winning submission. We did a project with Channel 4 Education and Battlefront, which was a response to the London riots at the time, where we did a historic youth debate in Parliament, which was a sound clash where we had young people talking about issues that were important to them, like do young people respect authority, for example. And then we'd have both we'd have two sides debate the point, and sometimes the people we didn't let the people choose which side they're going to be on. We put them on the side, so it was to show that young people not only had a voice, but they could be rational and kind of, even if they didn't necessarily believe it, they could chat to their peers and hear points. And we even saw during the event that people who staunchly had said something earlier in the morning about one thing were then, you'd see somebody make a point later in the day and they were nodding like, oh yeah, no, maybe that is actually not a bad point after all.
So you're broadening people's horizons there. But I guess what you're saying is, even with all those amazing connections and SBTV doing very, very well, your advice is you are going to make mistakes. So be prepared for it and dust yourself down. And the really important thing from all of that is to learn from it, not do it again, and just keep moving forward. Is that a good synopsis?
100%. And I guess finally, I'll just touch lastly on Super Academy. Super Academy is a project that started a few years ago with another partner called BJ, and the concept behind that was actually for us to help address those challenges for what is it that young people go through when they're starting up businesses, the problems that they face, and how should they go through that journey and process. And we kind of distilled it into three common denominators that were shared from my experience at SBTV and BJ's experience from his few years of enterprise at Supertuck. And even though they were different industries, we'd had a shared kind of self-worth and purpose around our enterprise journeys to that point. And we realized that through conversation with each other that the things that we shared, those experiences that we shared, were the experience was applied. So when something's hands-on, you learn by doing, and that's really important. The second thing is you have to be inspired and have influence. So always make sure that there's people involved in the project or in the room that have been there and done it before and can help take your ideas to that next level. And then the final point is be vested. So if you've got ownership and ownership within a project, then you're incentivized and motivated in the right way for you to do your best.
For you to succeed. So that's three pieces of great advice. And if anybody wants to find out about Super Academy, where can they do that?
Just head to the website super with an A, S-U-P-A hyphen academy.com.
Find out all about Liam. He's an amazing guy. Thank you for helping us. Cheers, Liam.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no, it's great to hear from Liam there, James.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. So our next segment is the Innovation Spotlight. And we have Tom Katnach from Studio Graphene. He's just joined us. He's had a nightmare of a morning getting locked into his flat and running down from London. But he's here. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you.
So my first question for you is, well, firstly, could you tell us a bit about your background and then how you came to work for Studio Graphene as well?
Yeah, sure. So my background is predominantly marketing. So my degree is in marketing. And then I did a few jobs since I've graduated, working in and out of marketing, but always trying to work in the tech and data space.
Yep.
Came across Studio Graphene when it had just started, very, very early days. Knew some people that worked there and was very, very interested from the get-go. And I was like, how can I get involved? And they were saying, well, we're actually going to launch this. It's going to be a proper company. And would you like to work for Studio Graphene? The intention when starting was to do the marketing for the company, but I made a transition sideways into working with product, and we're a digital agency, so we build products for people.
Yeah,
we work nearly entirely on new innovative products, so we're very heavily set up and designed to launch something from scratch and go forward from there, and that's kind of what I've been doing for the past year and a half.
Now, a lot of companies, it is always so difficult when you're not working on an evolution of a product, but actually bringing something new to the market. You know, how do you go about doing that in terms of, one, developing it and knowing what your customers want or your clients want, and two, then actually getting that in front of the right people so that you can achieve some sales?
So in terms of building what someone would actually want, we found that there's a big group now of prototyping products. They start with ones that you can use that are entirely web-based, which are very quick and easy to set up. There are much more complicated ones like Xur, for example. And these are brilliant because you can give a potential customer a prototype on their phone, if it's going to be an app, or you can give it to them on the web or whatever. And you can put it in their hand and you can say, does this help solve a problem for you? Which is much more powerful than just saying, oh, if I built this, would it help? If you put something visual in front of people, it's a much more two-way interaction. They can really give you some feedback about whether you're actually fixing anything for them.
Because in the past, we would have just drawn together some sort of output specification that they'd looked at, agreed, and then you'd go away and build it, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and those documents, they're great. They have their purpose, definitely. I mean, you need to at some point kind of document what you're going to be building, because otherwise you might stray off into any direction. But you try and keep it as slim and small as possible. Reach that first point of release, show people what you've been building and spending all this time on, then gather their feedback and kind of go forward from there.
So how many iterations would you think you'd go through on a normal product?
As many as there is time for, really.
Yeah.
So we're a little bit backward in terms of being a digital agency, because usually they'll try and encourage you to build more, because obviously that's better for them commercially, whereas we always try and tell people to build less. We're always saying, no, just skim the features out, really get down to the core value proposition. And then once we're there, we'll launch that and iterate as many times as we possibly can, really. And then the big iterations are a pivot where you're switching what you're doing entirely.
So do you get to the point where you go, this is good enough to launch, or this is perfect, we're going to launch, or is there somewhere in between?
Yeah, very much good enough. So yeah. we try and convince people that if we put like a beta symbol somewhere in the logo and we put it in the URL as well, so it might be, if it was product X, it'd be beta.productx.com, and that will make people a lot more forgiving. But also early on, it'll probably be your friends and your mum and your cat using your product. it won't be the masses, it won't be hundreds of thousands of people. So you can get away with making a lot of mistakes. So really, I just try and get to a point where you can launch something and really start showing people. The idea of people can get a little bit anxious and try and protect it, but really you're protecting it from finding out what people would actually want. So,
and how do you, I mean, I will come to Jay in a sec, but how do you manage that feedback process? Because that is crucial, really, isn't it? It's taking the product forward and improving. So how would that work in terms of feedback from beta users or people that are having a go, and your cat and your mum and everybody else?
So you can do it a bunch of different ways. I mean, with your beta users, it's really, really worth remembering also that there's, if you put it in front of somebody who would potentially buy it if it's a paid for product, and they say, I don't want it because of this, you have to be careful that they're saying, giving you honest feedback. Mm. If they just don't want to buy your product and you're shoving it down their throat, they will come up with a feature that you don't have that a competitor has.
Yep.
And they'll just tell you it just to get rid of you. So you have to be careful. In terms of recording it, you can do interviews. You can do like video or audio recorded interviews. You can ask for written feedback. There's also digital tools for this. There's a developer I know who would test his stuff by taking it out on his phone at the weekends and going to bars. And it's like, if drunk people can't use it, then it doesn't work. but it's one.
Can we try that? We'll put that to the test, shall we?
I think we've got some gin somewhere.
Yeah.
So I've worked in quite a few big agencies in London and also in Australia. And I know that digital is kind of where everyone is going in that sort of sector. Everyone's kind of merging. There's agencies are trying to become digital and get there fast, particularly with the rise of social media. But I'm interested in what tips you'd give people who are confused about digital products. What tips do you give your clients who come to you and say, you know, we want to do this, this, and this, but we have no idea how to go about and do it?
So, good.
Big question. Yeah.
So there's a process to it, yeah. and that usually starts with some sort of formalization of what you would want your product to do, and that traditionally would have been a requirements document, like a product requirements document. Generally, if somebody said, I have no idea what to do next, and our process pretty much caters to the whole of that, but if they weren't going to use us, and I was just talking to somebody, then I'd say, firstly, it's probably worth just reading the Lean Startup, the book, because that book will cover more than I can say on this radio show if I recorded it weekly for a year.
Yeah.
Because it's such a brilliant, condensed format overview of how to actually go about building something digital. And quick tips and takeaways would be, try not to take too long to launch it. Really get it in front of people as fast as you possibly can. And also, if you're not a technical person, and it sounds like maybe this person wouldn't have been technical, then find somebody you can trust to hold any technical person to account. We all know somebody who has some technical roots. Well, most people do. So find somebody you can trust to hold any technical team you then build to account to make sure they're doing the right thing for you.
Yeah. That's great. I think, you know, you're right about the speed to market, isn't it? I think that's a crucial. Perhaps tell us a little bit about some of the development work you've been involved in and some of the apps that you've actually gone through and actually taken to market. Gives a flavour of the work you've been doing.
I'm really interested in the Vitamojo food ordering application. Because I'm hungry 24/7. Yeah. I'd love to hear about that.
Okay, it's a good example of an early launch as well. So they came to us very early on in their business idea. Pretty much in this, that they actually did have computer development experience, but a long time ago, about 15 years prior to coming to us. And they wanted to launch a way of ordering food that was completely bespoke. Their business model was completely up for grabs. They weren't fussy about how it worked. In terms of the business models, they were willing to try some stuff. So originally they tried delivery. So we built a very, very, very small product that'll just allow people to select a certain amount of something and where it was going to and then pay for it. And the idea was that you could, instead of choosing, oh, I want one dish, two dishes, you could customize how much of each ingredient you had within your meal.
Christ, that's complicated, isn't it?
Yeah, making that simple was a challenge. Well, making it simple enough for people to understand was a challenge. So we launched that very early on. It was basic. It was kind of not great looking. It was a bit buggy, but we launched it. They tested it for a couple of weeks. People ordered food, friends, family, whatever. They realized that business model didn't work, but that gave them the real data to work it out.
Right.
A few months later, they came back, got some investment, and they were like, right, we know what we're doing. We've worked out the business model. We're going to open a store. We're going to serve from that store, but people can still order over the web. So right now, what would happen is I would maybe be sitting at my desk and I'm working. I would then be like, ooh, I fancy X for lunch. And you can go on the Vitamojo website and you can choose how much of each thing you would like to eat. So if I'm ordering one meal for me, I can choose 10 different dishes that might include salmon, sweet potato, quinoa salad, and I can choose, I want 50 grams of salmon and this and that and the other. All the nutrition within that as well is completely transparent and displayed to you, so you can work out how much protein, carbs, fat, salt, everything.
That's so good
there.
In the kind of the day and age of health conscious people.
Yeah, there's particularly where it's launched in London, there's a real health movement.
Yeah,
particularly people are very conscious of their intake. So yes, so there's definitely a market and a market trend towards that sort of ordering. So that's the idea. But they did pretty much what we would have liked to have done. So even with their second version and with their physical store, they had people in there when it wasn't finished. They were just saying, well, you can get free lunch if you come in and try it. Oh. And then what we realized in those 2 weeks was that we had some user experience problems that we needed to iron out before we launched properly.
Yeah.
And then we fixed those and then it went a lot better.
So again, it's good to do a test. That's a good tip as well. Yeah. Have just, a kind of...
just opening things up as early as you can. Just showing people what you've built and how it's going to work, because you'll find that there are problems. There's no way of... There's a user experience sort of revolution going on where this user experience design is going to come in and solve all your problems and you'll launch the perfect product and it'll never go wrong. And sadly, in my experience, I've never seen a product launch without a single problem. I don't think it's possible. If car manufacturers can't launch cars without a single problem with their vast resources, then you can imagine that it's quite hard for startups to launch one digital product.
Especially in the new digital space as well.
It's
going to be problems.
It's a complicated space. So just get stuff out there and let people see it and critique it.
Yeah. So you've also worked for Hawk.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about them.
So they are a health and safety monitoring system, kind of tailored into the food sector. So HACCP monitoring, things like that. So food safety monitoring. They also have a range of bespoke hardware. So they have their own temperature monitors, which then transmit over low energy Bluetooth back to something that they call a Roost. And that transmits all that data up to the cloud.
Okay.
The use case there is that you can put these sensors in your fridges and a butcher could have anywhere between 50 to 100,000 pounds worth of stock at Christmas in his fridge. If his fridge breaks, that's it. All that stock's gone. So it'll send texts or emails or whatever if a fridge falls out of a predefined temperature range. You can use this in pharmaceuticals. You can use it in cooking as well. It goes hot as well as cold. So you can put a probe within an oven and say if it goes below 200 degrees, then tell
So basically
someone.
They've taken tech from various sort of sectors and put it into that application, really.
Yeah, so it's kind of an Internet of Things project where they really were connecting existing technologies into a new product, which is a common theme in the Internet of Things space. All the stuff exists, all the bits of tech, all the Arduino unit and this, that, and the other, Bluetooth, temperature monitors, little motor servers. It all exists. It's just how you put it together.
Systems and things like that.
I mean, sending an SMS from a web server is incredibly easy because you have services, API-driven services like Twilio, for example, you can do it from your computer without doing anything. You can send a text to yourself just as a test. So there's a lot of really, really great stuff. And what we're seeing a really big trend in, or what we try and do for our clients, is solve their problems by using as much existing technology as we can to get there as fast as we can. Because once we're there, we can make it and iterate it and make it as bespoke as we would want. But if we start in a very bespoke way, you've probably wasted a lot of time getting to that build.
Because also you're reinventing all the time if you do that, don't you? Whereas if you can draw in technology from other sectors or other applications, it exists already, and actually you're making it, extending its functionality or what it operates with. And I mean, the hard bit there, though, surely is knowing what's out in the marketplace or what there is in other sectors to bring into your particular solution. How would you address that?
It's a case of research, just lengthy research. So sometimes you might not find the solution you're after on Google, but you might find it on a niche forum. The way I like to think, like, nearly every individual function of any given product someone might want to build has probably been done by somebody else. Probably. So really looking, you can maybe spend 2 days looking for something, but you'd save 2 weeks of building it. And also the other point of specialisms, if you choose to use a very common one, MailChimp, for example, if you choose to use MailChimp for sending your emails, I like to think about it like building a house. And if you are building your house, you're not going to invent your own type of hinge and then put that on every door. Because then if one of your hinges breaks, you've then got to make another hinge. Or if you want to change your doors, you have to make a whole load of new custom hinges. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more effort. Whereas if you just put it in a normal hinge that you can get from a supplier, it's a lot easier to replace. The tooling's much easier. Everything's better. So if you're going to use something like MailChimp, you can just send out information to MailChimp, and MailChimp will send the emails for you. You've picked a specialist. Now they're going to be concerned with whether your email's readable, whether it's deliverable, how quickly it goes out, how well maintained your database is, how well you're dealing with opt-outs, stuff like that. So you're handing off responsibility to people that are very well catered to deal with that responsibility and save yourself a lot of time.
So very much, and I know Jonathan's got a project management background, so have I, that's very much about that scoping phase, about what's available, what can you tie in and what can you use in the best, most cost-effective way, but the simplest way to actually achieve your objective or your client's objective. Is that how you would describe it?
Yeah, that's how I'd summarize it. I mean, with the use of APIs now, I mean, APIs, so RESTful APIs have become like a de facto standard for nearly every web service. And it means that you can build a lot of functionality very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You don't have to build web servers. You don't have to build email servers. You don't have to build SMS. You don't have to build login. If you're building a web application, then you don't have to build a login. You could just plug Google straight in, or Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or any other, and they all work. So you're even palming off the ability to have someone log in. So you can really share this responsibility out.
And is that still going to work? And how will that end up? What do you think? Sorry, you're in this development area. What can you see coming up over the next year or two? And I know it's really difficult to say that, but you know, how will things change?
Integrated services are going to be the next big thing. So if you look at Apple's iOS 10, they're integrating a lot more app-based services to within Siri. So integrated services could be very loosely summarized as a way of making a application that would have normally been an app you would press on to seem like it's part of the actual OS.
Yep.
So the more integrated services is a big trend that it suits everyone, because it suits the app developers, because they get to be the forefront of the whole application, within iOS rather than within their own app. They're not in a box anymore. They can operate outside of their box. And it suits the OS providers, so be that Android, Windows, Mac OS X, or whatever. Yeah. It suits them, because they get to appear like they're providing more services.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Tom.
Tom, that's no amazing. Worries. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come and see us.
So just a quick note, if anyone here owns a Samsung Galaxy Note 7, please don't take them on planes.
Yeah, they're banned, apparently.
Yeah, they're banned because they can blow up. So we don't want that.
Tom, where can we get information about your company? Just tell us again.
If you just Google Studio Graphene, we'll come up on Google.
Great.
Just thank you very much, guys, for joining us. And thank you very much to the listeners for tuning in. Please get in touch via our Twitter handle, the Tech Talk Show UK, and our website, techtalkshow.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you.